freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Welcome back, everyone, to Patriot Coalition Live. I'm Matthew Nugent.
And I'm Jason Marocek.
Our goal with Patriot Coalition Live is to educate our audience about the Constitution and proper role of government, the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage, and how to identify our threats to our God-given liberties, how to defend our country against those threats. We created this podcast primarily for members of the military, veterans, first responders, and other patriots who support them in their noble professions. Now, let's get on to today's topic. Episode 2 is about what makes America so special. We can talk for days about this topic, but we're going to focus on some of the main points today and revisit them probably in a multiple episode podcast later. So, Jason, there have been hundreds of different countries throughout history, many of them with constitutions, and a handful even have been republics. But what makes America's republic unique and so special?
No, you're exactly right. There's been hundreds of governments around the world, but none even come close to making it as special as we are. And it's really for three main reasons, right? Mm-hmm. So the first reason is that our rights were given to us by God, right? The second is our republic is based on our Judeo-Christian ethic. And the third revolves around our unique form of federalism, and that's talking about this kind of the separation of power. So both horizontally from between the three branches of government and also vertically between the federal and the state governments. Now, so we'll dig into each of those in more detail. And although today is going to be more of a 30,000 foot view, in future episodes, as Matt said, we're going to dig into much greater detail in each of these topics. So that first reason that makes us so special is that, you know, our liberties, all of our liberties are God-given, right? We were the first nation to recognize that those liberties were given to us by God and not by man or government or anything else. And so it wasn't that way in a lot of the other, even republics or even other constitutional forms of government throughout the history of the world. And for example, the Roman Republic, they had a constitution or a republic, but they were not necessarily, all of their liberties came from a set of laws. It didn't come from God. And so, you know, in our form of government, we actually codified all of these laws into our Constitution, right? Mm-hmm. So initially it came from memorializing them in our Declaration of Independence. So you remember the line that says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed with it by their creator with certain unalienable rights, those of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Or today we call it property. That's essentially what they meant. And so these are the rights that were memorialized in the Declaration of Independence, and then we later codified them in the Constitution to ensure that people understood that these values and these liberties came from God.
And because they came from God and not from man, it can't be taken away.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, like they are in other nations, right? They, you know, if government grants this, government
they
can
take
it
away.
That's exactly right. So the other element of this is the recognition that the sovereign entity here on Earth, at least in the American Republic, is we the people, right? We give a limited loan of our individual liberty to a government of our choosing so that they may make the laws that will protect our liberties that we allow them to do. And so so all political power flows from us to the government in a limited form. So that's the first one, right? So we recognize that our liberties come from God. The second thing is that, you know, we recognize that all these liberties, all the freedoms that we have, our constitutional republic is modeled after the Judeo-Christian ethic.
That's right.
So, you know, the moral standards that are set forth mm-hmm. in the Bible, you know, for example, the Ten Commandments we often refer to. Mm-hmm. Those, you know, as an example, the thou shalt not murder and thou shalt not mm-hmm. steal. We've codified right. those into our Fifth Amendment of our Constitution. Mm-hmm. And so it's important that even from the Constitution, all the other laws that we make in the United States, they ought to be moral in nature. I think it was, you know, Benjamin Franklin who said, you know, our Constitution was made only for a religious people, and it is wholly inadequate for the governing of any other.
That's right.
And this is something also that separates us from some of those other nations. You know, we talked a little bit about the Roman Republic, right? Here in America, you know, we're a nation of laws because we're a constitutional republic. They mm-hmm. were a nation of laws as a republic in Rome. The difference was in the morality, right? So as an example, in the Roman Republic, you had the 12 tables, which is kind of like their foundational document. Well, mm-hmm. two of the laws in those 12 tables, one of them was you should quickly kill any deformed baby. That was one of their laws. They had to abide
by. That is definitely not moral.
No, sir. And the one of the other ones is that if someone makes a song about you or is, in other words, in another way, slanderous towards you, mm-hmm. You are allowed to beat them to death with a club.
With a club, not with anything else, specifically with a club.
Yes. Yeah. You know, don't use a bar or
insane.
Anything like that. Yeah. So this kind of is a huge contrast, right? Yeah. You mm-hmm. can have a nation mm-hmm. of laws, but are those laws moral?
That's right. And can I add something to that, Jason?
Of course.
So we've made some very strong statements in the first two of the 3 points that we're a nation of laws, of morals, and a lot of it comes from our Judeo-Christian heritage. Now, when I became a Christian early as an adult, my early 20s in the Army and in the corporate world, I kind of felt like I was on an island, like it was very unusual to be a Christian. Mm-hmm. But a couple of years ago, I say around 2018, I started to really research and dig into what made America, how we came to be. And I realized what Jason just said is 100% right, even more so when you really start digging into it. Here are a few points, and I will give you a warning. What's that called? You tell somebody, get ready, something uncomfortable is going to come. For some of you, it'll be very comforting. For some, it will be a shock. And I challenge y'all to look into this. Follow us, and we'll give you more detailed evidence, okay? Here are a few things. Much of the Declaration of Independence comes from church sermons. I'll say that again. Much of our Declaration of Independence, I think I said that, comes from church sermons, meaning some preacher was saying we should have representation. We should be able to exercise religion. We should be able to protect ourselves, and on and on. It came from church sermons. It came from preachers. That said, 2/3 of the 56 founding fathers, some people say 55, 56, you know, but 2/3 of them were preachers. They were seminarians. So these people, these landowners, what have you, they would go preach on a Sunday, do their job, and then they'd go to, Independence Hall, right. And they said, hey, you know, we got to do this. And they were preachers, guys. Now, in history, understand there's written history and there's real history, okay? If you guys don't already know this, you know that God's been pretty much taken out of our public education system, and it's
that's
a
right.
travesty. And that's one of the reasons why Jason and I are here. We were fed up with it, and we are here to help bring information to you and help educate you and reaffirm your understanding for those who already have that understanding. And one of the most, atheist or ungodly persons, or at least represented that way, is Benjamin Franklin. Now, if that said, and he is in fact one of the most irreligious or unreligious, however you want to use it, founding fathers, this will shock you, okay? At the Second Constitutional Convention in 1787, they were making our current Constitution. And the founders were at an impasse. They could not get by a certain element. And Benjamin Franklin knew it was about to die. This Constitution was about to die, and we would be in dire straits, even more so than we were in our country at that time. So Mr. Unreligious said this. Now, I know it's not kosher to or copacetic to read straight from something verbatim, but in this case, I think it's worth it. Is that okay, Jason?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Okay. This is Benjamin Franklin. Sir, I have lived a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affair of men, in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that, quote from the Bible, except the Lord build, they labor in vain that build it, unquote. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall not succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel, unquote, which, of course, Babel fell. For an unreligious guy, that's quite religious.
Yeah.
So this was a shock to me. And I was on that island. I realized I was not unusual. It was not unusual for a person to be a Christian. In fact, the truth is, based on our true heritage, which is a Judeo-Christian heritage, it is unusual for someone not to be a Christian. Now, yeah. I have very, very good friends who are both sides, and they're like, Matt, this is insane. I don't know what you're talking about. Well, here we go, folks. So Jason, thanks for letting me read that.
Yeah, no, that's I'm really glad you shared that quote because it's one of my favorites. And from my perspective, you know, it's not like this nation of ours just popped up out of nowhere, you know, just happened to be the right time, right place. I mean, it was divinely inspired, you know, to Benjamin Franklin's quote there. So, yeah, thanks for sharing that. So we've talked about, again, you know, what makes America great. We've talked about the fact that all of our rights, our liberties, come from God, and we've talked about how it's our Judeo-Christian heritage that informs and makes our republic one that is good. And so, the third thing that makes our republic special, that sets it apart, is our unique form of federalism. So this is just another way to say kind of what you probably remember from your civics days in class as the separation of powers. So, you know, we're talking about both the horizontal separation of powers between branches of government, but we also talk about the vertical separation of powers between the federal government and the state. And so if we look at the horizontal separation of powers, you know, we have the judicial branch, we have the legislative branch, and we have the executive branch. And all of those in America are separate and independent, right? Which is a little bit different than many of the other either republics or constitutional governments out there. Most of the other ones, again, if we're talking about the Roman Republic again, in the Roman Republic, the Senate was the legislative body, as well as some of the assemblies for the plebeians, and the consuls were the executive branch. But even though they were different branches of government, they weren't necessarily independent. They had the Senate in the Republic would actually choose the consuls. And so you had consuls who were maybe, you know, for 1 year period of time. So you had consuls who were currying favor with senators. You had senators who were trying to stay out of the line of fire of consuls so that back then it wasn't unheard of for senators to be killed by consuls or some sort of conspiracy by the consuls. So
et tu, Brute.
Yeah, right.
That's an allusion to William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. That's what he said to Brutus when he gave him the most unkind cut of all.
Right.
You know, and
yeah. And so, you know, those sorts of things happen because, well, one, they were immoral, they weren't a Judeo-Christian society, but also because they weren't completely independent. They had to curry favor with one another in order to do that. And so what that breeds is this sense of consolidation of power or collusion between the branches of government, or that you had to play ball in order to get things done.
It can happen in our form of government, and in some cases it does, but it's much more difficult. And our separation of powers, both horizontally and vertically, you know, helps prevent that from happening.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. There's so many checks and balances based on our form of federalism and
the genius of our
framers that there's many ways to get at a problem of collusion, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of the examples that we might talk about in terms of, you know, what these checks and balances are, again, you'll probably remember from civics class. And again, we're going to go into these in much more detail in future episodes. Yep. But to give you an idea, a flavor, you know, you've got the presidential veto. When the legislature comes up with a bill that the president doesn't like, he can veto. You've got the overriding of a veto. If, you know, the legislature doesn't like, Congress doesn't like that the president's veto, they can, by two-thirds majority, they can override that. You've got the legislature that can repeal laws of previous Congresses if we find that, hey, they were not doing the right things. And, you know, we also can amend our Constitution, the most fundamental law out there, if we choose to go that route. So
that's hard to do. That's hard to do, but it can be done.
And they did it purposely for that reason. These things were so important to them that they didn't want these things to be transient, you know, whimsical types of things that came up with. So they made it very difficult for a reason.
So which helps our Constitution to be stable.
That's exactly right. You don't want a tumultuous government. You know, if I'm going out to farm the land or work in the factory or the mechanic shop or wherever in an office building, I don't want to have to guess what the laws are going to be when I'm done with my shift for the day and go home and find my family has been, sequestered away because, you know, I said something or they said something, right? Mm-hmm. You want to know what those laws are, and they should be stable. So that was a feature of our government. So there's lots of other checks and balances that, you know, we'll go to in future episodes. But that kind of covers the horizontal separation of those powers. And that, so the other part of our unique form of federalism is that vertical separation of power. And this happens when you have, it is an outgrowth of our 10th Amendment, right? So our 10th Amendment says that those authorities, those powers that are not granted by the Constitution to the federal government, nor are they prohibited to the states by the Constitution, should be reserved to the states or to the people. So in other words, if the Constitution doesn't say that the federal government can do something, mm-hmm. then it's the state's authority to do that if they choose to, or if they don't choose to.
So that way that the central government or federal government doesn't have all the power.
That's right. Yeah. And by design, again, we had just got done fighting the most powerful nation, powerful military on the face of the earth in order to become independent. And we knew what a very powerful central government could do. So there was no way that these men and women who, again, gave up their lives or their fortunes or sacred honor, a lot mm-hmm. of them, were destitute at the end of it. A lot of them were killed, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to let that happen again. So that was a reason why we did that. So that 10th Amendment, that, you know, what we call states' rights, that's where mm-hmm. that comes from, is that 10th Amendment. And so it's important to understand that, as you point out, that we've got mm-hmm. so many of these separations, both horizontally and vertically. But there's
So can I add something?
Yeah.
So if and when you and your friends get into a conversation and the separation of powers comes up, you can bring up, well, what separation of powers are you want to talk about? You want to talk about horizontal separation of powers, legislative, executive, judicial, or vertical separation of powers, state, federal and state. And that's why you'll see sometimes a county sheriff will say, I will not enforce this law.
Yeah.
And the first time I heard that, I thought, how is that possible? Do I have to follow all these laws? And the answer is no. And if any of you are out there ever become an elected official, hey, let this be a good education for you and a lesson for you to say, hey, I don't have to enforce a law which is not constitutional.
Yeah. No, and that's a great segue into one of the other I'll throw it in there under federalism and separation of powers, but it's this mm-hmm. this concept called interposition, right? This is kind of a universal feature of our form of government. So interposition discusses the concept that if someone is encroaching on our rights and they are trying to violate our liberties, that someone or some entity must come, it's their duty to stand in between those who are trying to violate our liberties and we the people, right? So, and you mentioned kind of, you alluded to this, one of the ways that you can do that, for example, this, our audience will appreciate this, is, you know, if Congress passes an unconstitutional enactment that prohibits citizens, we the people, from owning a certain type of firearm or firearms mm-hmm. in general, and they say, you know what, we're going to go ahead and send the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, maybe the mm-hmm. FBI, et cetera, whoever we're going to send to go and make sure that you're complying with that. It is incumbent, it is the duty of not only all citizens, but let's say specifically a sheriff of a county who has right. taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution. He didn't agree to just follow all laws. He agreed to follow the Constitution. And if someone passes a law that's unconstitutional, he is not obligated right. to enforce it. And more so, he is required to stand between we the people and those who are trying to come and take our guns yeah. in that example.
And that word interposition, inter means between, position comes from stand. So it literally means stand in between. And Jason, you talked about oath. But now we yeah. are speaking to people in the military, speaking to veterans, we're speaking to first responders, law enforcement officers, etc. But specifically to veterans, you ETS'd exit time of service, but you didn't take an oath that your oath ended. They, yeah. they didn't ETS your oath. Guys, gals, your oath to protect and defend the Constitution from enemies, foreign and domestic, does not expire. It hasn't expired. So hence, you know, Patriot Coalition Live. So we are here calling on our service members who are currently serving in our armed forces to educate yourself, but our veterans, it's a call to action. We'll get into that more as we progress in our episodes, but most importantly, that you educate yourself. Jason.
Yeah. No, so if you haven't had a chance to listen to our first episode, mm-hmm. you'll want to go back and check that out. We talked a lot about this. And what does that oath mean? You know, it's not
Absolutely.
Just as you said, Matt, it's not, you know, there's no expiration date on it. And you took an oath. And so it's the same oath that every public official in elected official in the United States takes.
It's funny. You say expiration date. You know, y'all signed your you know, when you raise your right hand and you swore your oath, you know, and you signed and your enlistment papers or your commissioning, and there was a date, you know, it'll end on that date. When you signed an oath, you didn't sign, there wasn't at the bottom expires like on the back of a can, you know, a piece yeah. of food. So it is alive, folks. Your oath is alive. And for a patriot, that means something.
Yeah, it sure does. And so that's why this concept of interposition, it's universal, because it could be a sheriff, it could be the president of the United States who decides that, you know, an opinion of the Supreme Court is completely off base, which happens. Historically, that has happened. It could be a legislature of a state saying, no, we're not going to comply with, you know, the requirements of a federal government. It could be an executive branch. It could be a governor.
Happens yep. all the time.
So it doesn't matter. It could be you or me, right? Anybody can, mm-hmm. can execute mm-hmm. interposition. We just hope that it's somebody with a little bit of backing behind them, right?
Yes. And that said, you can actually sue the government. Of course, we're speaking in the context of an elected official, but we as individuals can sue the government. And, you know, in our own way, interposition. That said, we are making an appeal to you, patriots, to elect officials who understand the Constitution, who support constitutional governance, other fellow patriots.
Right. Yeah. So these are some concepts that we'll dig into more in future episodes. But again, you know, what is it that separates us? What makes us so special as a nation? You know, our liberties are given to us by God. That's first and foremost. You know, we, the people, are the sovereigns in this nation, and all the political power flows from us. You know, second, we have the Judeo-Christian heritage that we draw upon for all of our moral laws, which mm-hmm. separates us again from company or from countries like, you know, the Roman Republic, et cetera. And then we have our unique form of federalism, where we have said, you know what, we're not going to invest power in one person or a group of people. Mm-hmm. We're going to mm-hmm. split it up. We're going to make it contentious. We're going to make sure that they can continue to fight each other and oppose each other when things aren't right in accordance with our Constitution. So those things in a nutshell are what make America so special.
And it's been working for a long time.
That's a great point.
longest living constitution in the history of the world, I think.
Yeah, we're the country that has been under the same document the longest, and that's not by mistake. Again, it goes back to what I said earlier about you know, our nation was divinely inspired. I think that those framers they had it right, and they were brilliant men, thanks to God.
And some people have used the phrase "American experiment." Now, when I first heard that word, I thought experiment, which means it can go wrong. It's active. It's living. Some people, you know, my good friends have said, I don't like that phrase, American experiment, because it's been working for so long.
Yeah.
It has been working for so long, but right now in our country, things aren't working that well, folks, or at least we're not using the system as it should be. It's not, maybe you can say it's apathy, it's lack of education. Mm-hmm. I call it, you know, communist creep, and you know, that should be a hashtag, stop communist creep, either a person or an ideology. But it's been working. Whether you like that phrase, American experiment or not, it's ours to own and it's ours to take action on. So thank you, Jason. We're wrapping it up. Thank you, folks. Thank you, folks, for listening. Thank you for your support. Go to patriotcoalitionlive.com, patriotcoalitionlive.com for your support, for more information. Your monthly support is very important to us. We're just getting started. We have a lot to learn, a lot to do, and a lot of people we need to reach, patriots we need to activate. Please give us a 5-star rating. Press that subscribe button. It does matter. We are available on every major hosting site for podcasts. So if you have any questions that you'd like for us to address, if you'd like some topics, we would love to hear your input. And veterans out there, or you're a veteran, what are some of the challenges you face? Folks in the military, we'd like to hear about some of your questions too, whether you're a Lance Corporal or an Airman, E3 or an O2 or an O7. That would be nice. I'd like a general officer to ask us a question. We know a few of those. But go to patriotcoalitionlive.com. Give us some feedback. Thank you for your subscribing and your support in those 5-star ratings. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.